We're back. It is the Tyler Stern Podcast, episode C-137 for all you Rick and Morty fans out there, or just episode 137 for the rest of you. My name is Dan Wimbush, editor of thetylerstern.com, and we've got a lot to catch up on after a couple of weeks off. We all started the international break high and full of joy after a great transfer window and a win at Birmingham. Fast forward a couple of weeks, and it's not been quite so good. 1 point from six, defeat home to Bristol City, and a draw at Griffin Park. We'll look at whether there are signs of positivity to take from those results, or if we should start getting a little bit worried. Thank you very much to everyone else who has joined us for this show. Before I introduce my co-host today, a very big thank you to everyone who continues to help the show via patreon.com/thetylerstern. That's patreon.com/thetylerstern. It's our electronic tip jar. It's our crowdfunding source. It's how you directly help this show grow and help the website. So thank you to everyone who continues to put their hands in their pockets. You don't have to give a lot, although if you want to give loads, please do. A couple of quid a month makes a massive difference. And if you're in that upper tier and give a little bit more, you might even get your hands on a Tyler Stern mug, as I shipped one off to Sweden the other week. And I was delighted to see they actually arrived. So good to see it in the right hands, Anders. Right. Anyway, with that plucking out of the way, my co-host today, he's back. It's his season debut. He missed the pre-season due to injury. It is the godfather, the grandfather of Tyler Stern podcasting and Reading podcasting in general, Mr. Alan West. Westy,
hello,
welcome back.
Yes, I'm glad to be back as well. So I don't know how many seasons I've done now. I think I'm up to 9.
Yeah, 2008, 9 was your first one, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So what, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18. I think it's, what, 10?
That is a veteran, isn't it?
That is a fully veteran. You drew a testimonial.
I thought I'd been retired out, to be fair, but still, one more game.
Yeah, we'll give you a testimonial at the end of the season. We'll get an all-star podcast.
That'd be lovely. Get some of the old boys back.
Yeah.
See if we can get Johnny Fordham back from his travels.
Yeah, we'll get the other Williams back.
Yep, we'll get him back
Paul,
as well.
Get Paul involved. Get everyone in.
Ship him in from Germany.
Absolutely.
They've all gone far and wide.
Yeah, so again, patreon.com if you want to fund Paul's trip over from Germany.
Or my testimonial.
Yeah, for Westy's podcasting testimonial. Anyway, Westy, as we haven't done a show for a couple of weeks, I was off on my jollies, so we've got a lot to get to. We'll delve into all that, starting in the recap.
View from the Tyler's Den. Recapping this week's championship action.
So as mentioned at the top of the show, Reading 0, Bristol City 1 and Brentford 1, Reading 1 are the two games we've got to talk about, Westy. Let's go back and talk about the Bristol City game a couple of weeks ago now, so we won't spend too long on it. Mm-hmm. But first of all, was this a deserved defeat for Reading?
No, I didn't think it was a deserved defeat. But once again, and it's sort of a theme this year so far, I didn't think Reading done enough to win the game. Do you know what I mean? Although they had a lot of the ball, they didn't create a great deal of chances. When they did, they fluffed their lines, and you always thought that Bristol City would get one opportunity to score. As it turned out, they had a great opportunity before they actually scored that the guy put wide, and then the goal sort of duffed in off the goalkeeper's hand, didn't it really? But you always knew that was going to come. And I haven't been on the show this year so far. When you look back at the games so far this year, the worrying trend is that Reading last year, they seemed to be able to nick games when they wasn't playing that well. This year, they seem to be playing well in patches, but not all the way through the game again. But they're not nicking games. And even if you go back to the Aston Villa game, where I thought Reading were really good that day, I thought they played excellent football. I thought Villa didn't know how to cope with them. But if you look at the last 10 minutes of that match, Villa scored, and then they had a free kick outside the box, which quite easily could have gone in net, and they'd have ended up drawing that game as well. We're just not killing teams off, and we seem to be struggling to score goals.
Well, this is where the whole, you know, we talked about this on last season's podcast. There was this big luck debate, wasn't there? Are Reading a lucky side? And I mentioned it, it was either with Tom or on the last time we did this show, but it's not luck, but it's, are you going to defy the odds? Because the odds are, if you're not having a lot of shots, you're not taking your chances.
Yeah.
The chances are you get games where teams nick it. And very few times did that happen to Reading last season. The QPR game, they lost. Villa. Those were the only two home games that it happened to us. This year, it just doesn't seem to be going in our favour. And that's that margin for error thing. If you're not putting teams away, you're going to have these results. And you can only have so many of these results before it's really fatal to your playoff hopes.
I mean, potentially you can lose 10 games in this division, can't you, and still get promoted?
Yeah.
The chances are that even a team that wins the league probably lose 7 or 8. Okay, so you can lose 10, but we've lost 3 already.
We lost at QPR, Preston, Bristol City.
We've lost 3, so we've lost 3 already. So that's not a great start out of 8 matches, is it?
No, not at all.
7 matches.
And look, as I said, in isolation, I mean, Bristol City are a good side. Look at the results they've had since they won that game. You know, they've drawn against Wolves So they're not a bad side at all. So this isn't a fatal result. This isn't against a complete bottom dwelling. This isn't a losing at home to Burton, for example. So we shouldn't go completely over the top because we've lost at home to Bristol City. But those are the games you really do need to at least not lose if you want to be in that top two, top six mix.
Yeah, and I don't want to be too down on them because I thought on the day it was a defeat, but it wasn't like they deserved to lose the match.
No.
I just didn't think they'd done enough to win it. And I thought 0-0 would probably have been a fair result on reflection. But like you say, we just didn't kill them off when we should have done. And then we paid the price in it ultimately. And I suppose even moving to the next game, Brentford, similar sort of thing, really. Brentford could have killed us off and they didn't. And then they got sucker punched and could have easily lost the game as well. And that's Championship football for you, all over.
Yeah, my voice assistant in the room just said, I'm not sure. So clearly it's not made up its mind on Reading's form either this season.
No.
But yeah, I mean, we look at it the other way. If Bodvarsson puts away that chance, which you would love to hope an international striker does 99 times out of 100.
Yeah.
We're probably talking about a 1-0 Reading home win, a point at Griffin Park, and you're saying 4 from 6. You know, you're on that nice march up, back up towards the top six. As it is, with those 1 point from six, we're 18th in the table, admittedly with a game in hand.
Yeah.
But 8 points from 7, Westy, that is our worst start since the 2011-12 season, where we had 7 from 7, although we did end up winning the league that year. So get the sausage rolls out, we'll get a promotion party.
Yeah, like I said, I don't want to be too down on them because I looked at the bench the other week and I thought, wow, we've got a good squad of players all of a sudden again. The only concern is that squad of players don't seem to score a lot of goals if you look at them historically. I mean, Kelly's been chipping in, which obviously he hasn't got an historical goal record because he's only just started playing first team football. But when you look at Bodvarsson, was it 3 goals last year? And that's the man you're relying on to put the ball in the net. And so far, from the opportunities I've seen him have, he should have had at least 3 to 4 goals this season as we stand. Now, hopefully that'll change for him, but historically, you suggest that it won't.
Yeah, you need him to get those early chances away as well, because confidence can do massive things for strikers over the years. You look back at your Shane Longs and people like that, who once they got those goals, really went on a roll. And Bodvarsson, he got that first one under his belt up at Birmingham, but since then he's missed a few chances. He had a few at Brentford as well, probably the best two chances we had in the first half. Second one in particular, a lot of fans saying, oh, he should have scored from getting around the keeper, but it was a bit of a difficult chance, that.
Yeah, well, it didn't make the highlight package, so that tells you we need to know. So it couldn't have been a great chance. But I think he had a good chance at QPR as well early in the season that he missed from quite close. And like I say, it's that at the moment is making the difference. We need someone to put the ball in the net and just kill teams off, but just not seeming to do it. And that is the concern.
Yeah, well, you go from a late sucker punch from Aidan Flint to give Bristol City the win to Griffin Park. Nice, boisterous away end. Always a good game at Brentford, atmosphere-wise, if not result-wise. We seem to get stuffed there fairly often. But it started end-to-end, and then Brentford just sort of, they scored and they took control. Looking at the Brentford goal, how many times have we seen a goal like this, Westy, where the defence, the midfield doesn't track, the defence sort of stands still, and you get a player beating a keeper from close range?
Yeah, and poor passing as well, giving the ball away cheaply. They've done it quite a lot in the first half. If you're going to play possession football, you've got to keep possession, and they're just not doing it, or they have spells, and they did it last year as well, where they give stupid goals away when you're in a strong position, when you've got the ball, and that's when you should be okay. It's not as if they're getting tackled, they're just mispassing.
It's the amount of space in the box that these strikers seem to be getting, or midfielders for that matter.
They're very open, aren't we?
Yeah, you look at the goal that Hugh Gill scored for Preston against us up at Deepdale, and you look at the space that Clark has for Brentford on Sasti. Well, you know, there's nobody blocking him off. There's no tracking. I looked at Joe Vandenberg for the goal, and he just gives up. He gets beaten in the tackle, and they just sort of just jogs. There's no like sprint, I'm going to keep up with you. He gets away. You know, ultimately, it's not Vandenberg's job. It's the defence is the final line. But I want to see that extra effort from the midfield. I want to see them getting in front of those shots, keeping the space tight. It's something we did really well under Steve Clark.
Yeah.
Especially in the big games when it mattered. Those banks of players behind the line, there was no gap. There was no space for players to run into. Look at that FA Cup semi-final against Arsenal. Brilliant
effort,
perfect example of how to defend. And we just don't seem to be able to do it, especially away from home now. In 2017, we've kept 3 away clean sheets, if you not include Wembley. 2 of those have come against Birmingham, who have been awful.
Yeah.
And the other one came against Sheffield Wednesday when Ali Al-Habsi had an absolute worldie. So there's just something. And I go back to the team selection for Brentford as well. We saw the 5 at the back work against Birmingham with a 2-0 win. Went back to the back 4 at Griffin Park. Is that a decision you agreed with?
No, I don't. I think if you look at us again defensively, we have been poor away from home. So you'd think that a bare minimum, you try and keep a clean sheet. But like I say, Reading play very open sort of football, and playing forward or back makes it even more open because there's bigger gaps. If you've got someone sort of drifting in behind the two centre backs, you've got that extra cover. Now, whether he's thinking we're putting Van der Berg in midfield and he's sitting in front of them, I'm not sure he does that job all that well all the time. No. You know, he does tend
to have switches off.
Yeah, he just had the odd moment of going to sleep, and so does Blackett as well. There's similar sort of players in that sort of mould. They do tend to switch off, and it does cost us. I think he should have stuck with three. I also think, looking back as well at the Bristol City game, if you watch that game, when Reading are in good positions to score goals or to get crosses in, the midfield are not getting into that box quick enough. They all seem to stand on the edge of the box or stand further back. Now, whether that's because we've got a lot of defensive midfielders, I know Edwards is more of a goal-scoring midfielder, so I'd expect him to do it, but obviously we haven't seen enough of him yet. I go back to Koppel football a lot. And when you see Koppel football, when the ball's wide, the box is full.
Yeah,
and when you watch our football now, when the ball's wide, there's two players in there, or one, and that's not enough.
But this is just the question that I have with Stam's midfield and the combination. Is what is the combination they're designed to do? Is it a trio that he's hoping are going to protect the defence and keep the goals out? Or is it a trio he's got in mind to create lots of chances? And the stats are damning. Like you say, you know, clean sheets aren't happening. We're conceding sloppy goals. People are having space in the box, so they're not doing that role defensively well. Attacking-wise, key passes, 71 in seven games. That's only 17th best in the league. A key pass is one that leads to a chance. So again, they're not creating either. The trio we saw at Brentford was Van den Berg with Dave Edwards and Liam Kelly. We had Bakuna in there for Edwards against Bristol City as well. Do you think he knows the combination that he wants, or do you think that it's just a plan that's not worked so far?
I don't think anyone knows the combination at the moment. I mean, I was doing the, I don't know if you do this as well, but on Get Ready on a Friday, they do, you can pick your own team.
Yes, squad selector.
And I always tend to do it just to see what the other teams are. And I don't think anyone had picked the same side, which is either because players are not in good enough form to be able to be, everyone say actually, no, they should be picked. Or, like you said earlier, does anyone know what the best combination is? Because I like Clement. I think he's a great player.
Yeah.
I see him play in the Carabao Cup against Millwall. And I thought he was excellent when he played. I think he's strong. I think he's good on the ball. I think he looks like he's going to get forward. I would pick him personally. And that might be a controversial decision.
In a midfield sort of
in midfield. In playing sort of an attacking midfielder.
Okay.
Because I think he looks like a good player that's going to need time because he's obviously adjusting. He's not really played a lot of first team football. But I think out of the lot of them, I think he offers you more as an athlete and as a footballer. And I think he is the sort of player that can keep ball because he's used to playing that sort of football.
The thing is as well, when John Swift comes back from injury, Stam's got another headache because you look at the options he's suddenly got. You've got Vandenberg, Evans, Bakuna, Swift, Kelly, Edwards, Clement, not to mention a couple of the youngsters who, you know, put their hands up, you know, the Rinomotors of this world.
Mm.
So many options. It's got to be tempting for Stam to keep tinkering and trying. You know, a quote that stood out for me from his post-match this week, he said, "We're starting to get to know the players a lot better in training sessions and games, so it makes it easier to pick them. It doesn't mean the 11 in my head will be playing every time, because we will still look at the opposition and think about which player is best for which game." So it does seem like he's not sure at the moment. But also, the thing that stands out for me looking at that, Westy, is you go back to Koppel football and Brian McDermott football to a certain extent, the two managers that have won promotion from this league. They picked a team and they said to another side, go out and beat it. I don't get that feeling with Stan that he's ever going to do that.
That's exactly what I was thinking when you read that statement out. I think you should pick your best side that you think every match, and we should let them worry about us rather than us worry about them. I don't think, again, looking at the Championship, there doesn't seem to be anyone that's world beaters again. And I think when you look at Reading's squad, we've got a side that's capable of winning any game on its day. I think you should get a settled side, especially because you've got a lot of new players in that team now. Pick your team, set it out, and let teams know what we're all about rather than worrying too much about what goes on everywhere else. Because, like I said, especially at home, I think we're strong in general. We were last year very strong, and I think we've probably got a better squad of players this year, arguably, but I think we have. I think we've got lots of options in lots of positions, but I think you keep swapping and changing. No one really gets to know one another. I think you need a settled side, and I think that would be beneficial to us going forward, I think, personally.
I think when you get into the Christmas grind, you can understand with replacing like for like. But at the moment, there doesn't seem to be certainly watching from the outside, that plan that's obvious, like, ah, he's in there to do this, he's in there to do that. Everyone just seems to be sort of floating around, especially in the middle. And getting that midfield combination right is vital. Mm-hmm. As much as we talk about getting players to stick away the chances, getting those chances to them and also saving those at the back as well is what's going to define the season. We've always talked about having strong midfield combinations. Ledgerwood and Carachan, Sidwell, Harper, Osborne, Goodin, don't seem to have that standout combo right now.
No, and they need to know each other's games, if that makes sense. They need to get a partnership on the pitch. I mean, I think down the years, last 3 or 4 years anyway, we've had McClear and Gunter. They know each other's game. They played together before. They know what each other's going to do. You know the limitations. Barrow, I mean, I've seen Barrow, my opinion hasn't changed on him from what my friend said to me when he was at Leeds. He said, yes, he's very quick. Yes, sometimes you think, oh, he looks really good, but ultimately, he has no end product. And I think, to be fair to him, I think what I've seen of him this year, he does have a work rate. He will come back, he will track back. But of course, you need to know that, don't you? McCleary's a different sort of player. I mean, he does track back, he does do the work, but McCleary's probably losing the yard on him nowadays.
Yeah, I was going to say, not a really positive weekend for Gareth McCleary.
No, it wasn't. It was a good opportunity for him to get back in the side as well, because we know what he's about, McCleary, and he know he can be a match winner. And same as Aluku, he's clearly going to play him every week, because you don't spend that sort of money on a player and stick him on the bench. And the midfield, Edwards has come in now, like I said at the start, we haven't seen a lot of Edwards, so we don't know an awful lot about him. But in general, if someone's been at a club for 10 years... it's very rare they go somewhere else and make a name for himself. Does that make sense?
No,
it's like,
it does.
It's like you won't have many Wolves fans speak
look at
about
James Harper when he left Reading.
You won't have many Wolves fans tell you about Michael Jukes because he was at the back end of his career. He played for a season, you know what I mean? Whereas at Reading, we eulogise about him. So I don't know if Edwards will improve the midfield. We just hope he does. I mean, he's a big, strong lad, so that's somewhat that we haven't got or hadn't got. But again, I still think Clement is... the best.
I think there's a certain trust issue as well with Stam as well, because you look at the amount of times he goes back to Joe Vandenberg and Roy Behrens.
Yeah.
Behrens coming on at half time at Brentford for Bodvarsson, whether it was a slight knock or a tactical sub, it hasn't been clear from what he said post game, but he trusts those two players and he doesn't seem to necessarily trust other people in the squad. Your Thiago Alouris, you know, other people in that team, he doesn't clearly have that same level of commitment.
And the flip side to that is you earn trust, don't you?
Yeah.
So obviously them players haven't done enough to prove themselves to him yet, in his mind anyway. Thiago Alouris, I think, is a good player. I think he should play every week, especially if you're playing a back three. Even arguably, I would put him left back rather than Blackett, because Blackett's not one of my favourites. He's another one who flats to deceive sometimes and does switch off. So yeah, if you pay a lot of money for players, you expect them to play. Obviously, he doesn't earn his trust yet. Paying $3.5 million doesn't count for much in Stam's mind, obviously.
Yeah, well, you mentioned Tyler Blackett. Jordan Obita coming on for his first minutes of the season. Good to see, especially with the way he finished last season as well. Hopefully, he can continue that form. And that gives him a bit more option. I think sometimes the downside to that back five system is that Blackett, a left back, does he offer you enough going forward? Whereas Jordan Obita seems tailor-made for that role.
Yeah, he is a wing back. He's not a left back and he's not a winger. That is his position, I think, wing back. And he's very good at it. And he does put good crosses into the box.
So overall, you know, Liam Kelly gets the penalty midway through the second half.
Scored, wasn't it?
Yeah, a little bit soft.
I'd have been upset if I hadn't been given
the second one was probably close to a penalty than the first one.
Yeah, but you give the first one, so you won't get the second
one. You get the penalty, you get the goal, you escape from there with a point. It was a game we lost last season, so I suppose you say, well, that's a positive. But is that how you left the game? Did you leave the game thinking, okay, all right, we've got a point here? Or did you go, have we only got a point against a team that were 23rd?
I thought we got away with it, to be fair. I thought they could have been out of sight before we got back into the match. In the end, Luca hit the crossbar, we could have won the match, but I think we got away with a point. Whereas last week, we should have got away with a point and didn't. But that's not good enough, really, against Bristol City and Brentford. Like you say, Brentford, I don't think they've won this season, have they?
No.
So you look to, if you're going to get some away points, you expect to get three. And we're not getting them against the clubs that I think are going to be mid-table at best. And we haven't really played anyone yet.
Yeah, I was chatting to Wim Senior on the phone yesterday. And you know, he was sort of saying, look at the teams we have actually played. You know, we've not played your Leeds yet. We've not played even, you know, your Sheffield Wednesdays, your Wolves.
Your Middlesbroughs, your Hulls.
Exactly.
That's the test.
It is, but hopefully Reading can, you know, rise to the occasion. They've generally done that over the years, especially at home. You think back to last season, they didn't get beat by Brighton, they didn't get beat by Newcastle, they didn't get beat by Fulham. So hopefully we can continue that this season. But as mentioned, 18th in the table now, 8 points from seven, and our worst start for 5-6 years. We're 7 points off the top six already and 9 points off the top two. Very, very, very early days. And, you know, like I mentioned, we had fewer points and won the league in 2012. But are you already at a point now where you can sort of say with a certain amount of confidence, we either will or won't be challenging for that top two?
I really don't think you can say anything. We've seen Reading be bottom half before Christmas and, like you say, win the league. So it tells you nothing. I think Reading have had a lot of changes over the summer. There's a lot of players coming into that side that we don't know an awful lot about. It will take time for them to settle. And I think that they'll get better and better as the season go on.
Yep.
Well, so, I hope so anyway.
I don't see a lot from this side to make me think that they're going to be top two. I think I said this after deadline day when we did a show. I think not getting that striker, whether it was Oliveira or whoever, means that they're not going to get the top two. Because I don't think they've got that quality to get them out of jail. We've already seen it. They've not got the quality up front to get them out of jail when they're not playing well. But they have enough quality in this squad to be competing for the top six. 7 points is nothing at this point in the season. We've got a game in hand. You know, you beat Hull, other results go our way. Suddenly it's 5 points, game in hand, 2 points, boom.
Yeah.
Right back in the mix. So too early to say, but just looking at some of the way the other teams are doing and the strength there, I think top two, I don't see it. I don't. Based on what we've seen so far and the general quality of the squad, I don't see top two happening. But hey, like I said, I certainly wouldn't have said that at this stage in 2011.
No.
And look what happened there. Anyway, we'll get into some of your thoughts on the game in the mailbag a little bit later on. But in the meantime, we've got some news bites on the way, including an injury update for Modu Barrow.
Reading News Bites on the Tarlhurst End podcast.
Okay, so news bites time. And as it concerns Mr. Barrow, as mentioned, he wasn't in the squad for the Brentford game. That's because he's picked up a minor knee ligament problem, says Mr. Stam, that will keep him up for up to 10 days. That was said on Saturday. So that presumably rules him out of next weekend's game with Hull, but hopefully he'll be fit for the week after. Bit of a blow, Westy, because, you know, we talked about him a little earlier, but even if his end product hasn't been great, he's an exciting player. I like watching him.
Yeah, I think he's the sort of winger that Reading fans like, the sort of Jilksy type player, but he's a Kebay type player.
Yes.
But like I say, just flattered to deceive a little bit, and hopefully his own product will get a bit better. But like I say, he is a miss because of his pace and the fear factor with him. I mean, we've seen two times this year where he's got one player sent off just because he was too quick, and he should have had another player sent off, which he didn't. But like I say, that's the threat he's got, and that's what we've been lacking.
Yeah, and you never want to see any sort of ligament type issues with quick, pacey players as well. It's never a great sign, but fingers crossed it's just a minor knock and he's back. No worse for wear. And moving completely away from on-field issues to off-field issues, a couple of stories related to trains, one positive, one negative. We'll start with the positive, and that if you've been waiting for that elusive Green Park train station, well, it might just move a step closer next week, with reports that the council are set to agree their spending on it at a council meeting next Monday, the 25th of September. So Westy, finally looks like we might have a train option, although based on where it is and all the rumours, I wouldn't expect too much.
Yeah, I wouldn't hold your breath for that one. But like I say, it would be useful. It'd be useful for the people that work there as well, I'd have thought.
Yeah, exactly. So hopefully, fingers crossed, we can find it. At least if it's there, it's an option, even if it's not the best option. So fingers crossed they approve it. And unfortunately, the negative story, did you see this, Westy, about the flare?
Yes, I did. I didn't read it, but I did see the headline.
So for those of you who haven't seen this story, a group of supposedly Reading fans let off a smoke bomb on a train going to Brentford. Now, at any point, this would be an absolutely moronic and idiotic thing to do. However, given events that we saw in London last week and the terrible terrorist incident there, an even stupider thing to do.
Yes, I'm sure it was done as a matter of horseplay and stupidness, but like I say, at the present level of fear factor there are around trains and tubes and bombs, that is a technically stupid thing to do.
Beyond moronic on any level. And I'm sorry, if the only way you think you can have a good time and get fans motivated for a game is letting off a smoke bomb on a train, just give up.
It beggars belief what some people think is fun.
Well, Reading Football Club released a statement. They've said, Reading Football Club wholeheartedly condemns the dangerous and extremely irresponsible behaviour seemingly displayed by an individual or individuals whilst travelling on a train to watch us play Brentford yesterday afternoon. Behaviour of this nature is entirely unacceptable. As a club, we actively assisted the relevant local authorities with an investigation into the incident, and we open the appeal to our fans to report any information which may assist in the identification of those responsible to the British Transport Police. We also acknowledge that the vast majority of the 1,650 away fans behaved impeccably in backing the team from the first whistle to the last at Griffin Park and should be commended for their superb support yesterday. Yeah, you wholeheartedly agree with pretty much everything there. If you do know who these people are, shop them in. If they didn't have anything directly to do with it, the video evidence is there. I'm sure they'll be cleared. But it just, as I said, moronic. I don't want to spend too much longer on it. This whole no pyro, no party attitude, the beggar's belief.
Again, totally inappropriate and completely stupid and, like you say, idiotic. And whoever did it, you're a fool.
Indeed. Would you say an unprofessional joke of a fan?
This is a definite unprofessional joke of a fan.
Agree.
Or commuter.
Yeah, or commuter, yes. And look, let's not tar, again, as the end part of the statement from Reading, so let's not tar the entire away fans. This looks like a very small majority of idiots. Minority of idiots, should I say, rather than any sort of backing.
It was probably one idiot, to be fair.
Yes. As happens with these local away games, I'm sure a few cans were consumed.
Yes.
And, unfortunately, has led to that. So, anyway, hopefully the investigation goes far, and if you do have any information, as I said, report it to the authorities. Meanwhile, it's time to get into your portion of the show. It is time for that mailbag.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter.
At The Tarlhurst End.
And facebook.com/The Tarlhurst End.
As always, a big thank you to everyone who continues to fill the mailbag. Westy, as it's a draw, we've got a middling mailbag this week.
Yep, we know this, don't we, from experience.
Yeah, I imagine it would be rather bigger had we not scored that penalty at Griffin Park. But as it is, we've thank you for all the feedback at The Tarlhurst End on Twitter. TheTarlhurstEnd@gmail.com and facebook.com/TheTarlhurstEnd are how you can get in touch. We will start with Luke Jarrett. Now, this one was actually sent in a few weeks ago, but I missed it for the show. But I wanted to get your opinion on it anyway, Westy. It was in relation to when we were blinked with Shane Long during the transfer window.
Okay.
Luke says, with the rumour about Long all but dead, which one of all of our ex-players in their prime would you take right now? James Harper for me.
Sidwell.
That was my initial answer.
Sidwell would be great in that side.
I was also going to say Shane Long.
Oh, definitely. If you had Shane Long up front, I can shoo him for promotion.
I think the team needs a really good striker that can, again, get him out of jail rather than a midfielder right now.
I mean, if you had Long, Barrow and Aluko up front,
yeah,
that is a quick front three.
Even Forster in there.
Oh, yeah, Forster as well. But you'd have a quick front three. I think Long in this division would be, they'd struggle to play against him. They did when he was at his prime. I still think at the age he is, he could do a turn for us, and I wouldn't mind if he come down alone in January, but I can't see it happening.
Jimmy Quinn or Jason Roberts also stuck out for me. It's really difficult with Quinny because you just don't know how he would translate to this football, but he could do bits of everything.
Oh, he's a goal scorer. Score goal, simple as that. I've well publicised what I think about Roberts. I thought he was a player that turned an average team into a good side. Just being but one man, yeah. And he was brilliant. So, yeah, any one of them, really.
Yeah, lots of options.
Yeah,
I think he says so, and we can come up with so many options.
You could.
Nicky Shorey as well, I think we do.
Shorey, he's the only left back I've seen win games from left back. Yeah. Brilliant, absolutely brilliant footballer. And again, he'd walk into that team. Yeah. Probably now.
I think he was last seen playing for Hungerford, so yeah. I don't know what he's doing now. So thanks for the question, Luke. Apologies you didn't get out a few weeks ago. Robert Stevens asks, should Yap stick with the 4-3-3 away until he finds an effective functioning midfield, or revert now to 5-3-2 away with 4-3-3 at home?
That's what I would do, the last option, 5-3-2 and 4-3-3.
Yeah. I can understand the argument with, you know, we said it earlier, you almost want to find that 11 and stick to it. But I just think, just generally based on the way Reading play, I think you have to go to that back five away from home.
Yeah, definitely. I think just make them solid. Stop them conceding goals. Because like I say, if you ain't going to score a lot, you need to stop conceding them.
If they start smacking teams 3-4-0 playing 4-3-3,
yeah, great.
Then you move that and you start saying, okay, like we said, you know, you stick to that same side week in, week out and make teams beat you. But they're not doing that.
No.
So for now, you almost kind of have to be a bit more pragmatic.
It's kind of a curse of modern football, really. There's not a lot of teams that sort of tend to keep the same 11 every week, is there?
No.
I think you've got such big squads and so many people that need to play that to keep everyone happy, you just have to rotate.
Yeah. unfortunate, really. Gone are the days when you literally had 14, 15 players in your squad and that was it.
Yeah.
You used to see Uwe Hartenberger every 5 games.
Yeah.
Pop up.
On the flip side, if we've got a load of injuries, we were playing the same 11 every week and the bench was really weak. We were complaining about that as well.
Exactly. Got different days, different eras. Steve Curtis asked the very important key issue that's been plaguing all Reading fans this week. Tea or coffee? Are you a tea man or a coffee man?
It's a difficult decision. I used to drink a lot of coffee, but reverted from doing it, so I've gone back to tea.
Okay, I'm firmly in camp tea. I've never really got on with coffee.
I like a hot chocolate as well.
Ooh, curveball. Curveball. Okay, well, interesting. Anyway,
see, we can't even pick what we'd like. I know, tea, exactly, coffee, hot chocolate, let alone a midfield.
Yeah, indeed. Matt says, only two teams have scored fewer goals than us so far, Birmingham and Bolton. The lack of a goal-scoring striker already taking effect.
Yes, it is, definitely. But again, we're not creating enough chances either. And again, that comes from the fact that when the ball's getting into the box, there's not enough players in the box trying to score goals.
Yeah, and that stat I put out about key passes, I think we're 18th in the league for key passes. So it's not like we're, you know, Brentford had a fair argument for saying they're underplaced because if you look at the amount of shots and they've had, they're up the top and just can't do anything. But Reading aren't even doing that. So it's not like we're sitting here talking about four or five amazing chances again that are not being finished.
And we said it last year, we didn't create a great deal of chance last year, except for we had Kermagood and Swift putting the ball in it then. At the moment, that's not happening.
Yep. N. Cole, RFC 92, says, how many points do you think we'll get out of our next three games? I think maximum 9, minimum 7. What do you think? I'll take a minimum 7.
Yeah, I think you take 7 out of 3 matches all through the season. It'd be good enough, wouldn't it? I'd be, again, it's championship football. You don't never know what you're going to get. Anyone can beat anyone.
Well, the next three fixtures, because I couldn't think who the third team was. We've got Hull on Saturday. Then on the Tuesday, it's a trip to Millwall. And the following Saturday, it's Norwich at home. I think it's asking a lot for 7.
It's too tough home as a minimum. And to be fair, Millwall were very good the other day. When I watched them against Leeds, they could have won 3 or 4 easily.
I think if you take 5 from 9, you are content. I think 6... is good, and I think seven to nine is brilliant.
In any three games, if you get 7, then you're probably going to win the league.
Just avoid defeat. If they can avoid defeat in 3 games, that gives you a really solid base to build off.
Yeah, I think we want to see them score a few more goals and look a bit steadier at the back would be nice.
A first half goal would be fantastic. Reading are the only team in the championship that haven't scored a goal in the first half.
There's a curveball it again. Do again. Last year, I thought we played what I can only describe as boring football.
Yes.
And again, I'm thinking it's quite boring.
It is for the moment. I tweeted
good out, against Villa.
Yeah, I tweeted out at halftime. It's boring, it's uninspiring, but you give them the benefit of the doubt because of the new players, because of some of the injuries. I wrote an article about 3 weeks ago saying that I'm actually quite excited by what Stan... I sort of could see what Stan was trying to do with the signings he was making, but so far, he's not utilised them in a way that's any different.
Yeah, I'm still... Don't get me wrong, I'm still excited to go and watch them, but when I get there, I'll come out thinking...
You just hope that with maybe Kermit back, with Swift back, with Barrow back, and with, you know, people like Bakuna and Obita getting in the team as well, that they gradually build up that flair, build up that attacking understanding.
It's, for me, it's like a bit like last year, it's still a little bit too slow. Do you know what I mean?
Body.
If you're going to play possession football, great, but have some purpose with it. And we seem to go backwards, sideways, and then create one chance every half hour. And all right, it worked last year, but it's still not exciting to watch.
But that's what I mean. With a rested Swift, with a fit Obita, with a returning Kermigan, I think he's got the ingredients now in the squad to play something a bit more exciting. It's just whether that actually materialises.
Oh, yeah, I agree with you. But I think Kermigan, I thought he was very good last year. He was the fulcrum of everything. You know what I mean? He defended really well. He scored a lot of goals. You could hit him. He's super important to that side. But they've not replaced him and he's retiring. And after a long spell out at the start of the season, not really having a pre-season, being injured, it's going to take Kermit a little while to get going. You might even see the best of him until the end of January.
Yeah.
And then it'd be too late.
Yeah, look, I'm not going to sit here and pretend it's been entertaining so far, but hey, look, as I said, I give them that pass. I give them those few weeks to bed those players in and then see what they can do. But look, put it this way, I'm not rushing out to rewatch the YouTube highlights 3 or 4 times.
No, there's not a lot of them in general.
Yeah, the season DVD is very short at the moment.
Yeah, and I think it might
it's like one of those. It's like one of those flip books.
Yeah, I think that's all you need. That's every, that's why Reading tend to be on the back end now of the old highlights programs, because there's not a lot of highlight to watch.
Yeah, it's a GIF.
Pointless.
It's, you can get it all in one GIF at the moment, I think, rather than seeing the whole thing. Anyway, Nick Beckett says, has work resumed on the new training ground? That would be a good indication of the owner's long-term interest. Well, it's our understanding on this issue that work is ongoing, that they are still in the final sort of planning and preparation, and there might be some very early work going on. I think they just need to sort of figure out exactly what they want to do with it, is the general sort of understanding. But look, they have to build it, because if they don't build it, they'll lose Category 1 status. So yeah. I think the owners put out a statement a few weeks ago talking about their how they're keen to do it. I know Nigel Howe is working away in the background on bits and pieces as well. So yeah, it's our understanding that the work is still going into it. Albeit I don't think we're at a stage where they're, you know, they're building pitches and building buildings. I think it's just that those sort of final plans. But look, if it doesn't happen, we're going to lose the academy. It's that's it. Well, we'll lose a Category 1 academy anyway.
Yeah, it will happen. They won't let that happen, I wouldn't have thought.
Yeah, absolutely. Sam Ferguson says, is it overreductive to say that we've signed a lot of players and Stam just needs time to bed them in and find his best side? So this is just kind of what we were just talking about, Westy. Is it just a case of you think that it's all going to click into place soon, we just need to be patient, or are there fundamentally bigger issues that you think are going to get in the way?
No, I just think they need time to all settle in and again, get a. I know they've got a pattern of play, but I don't think people know how to play in it yet. And even the players that have been there before, there's been big size change. That front three is completely different. The midfield, there's two or three players that are coming in there that have not been there before. After they've had a little bit more time together, I'm sure that eventually it'll click in. But again, I think still you need to start picking an 11 and letting them work with it.
Yeah, you look at the past successful Reading sides and how long it took them to sort of really get into their strides. I mean, we can talk about the 2005-06 team as much as we want, but that was a freak side.
Yeah.
You look at the other successful sides and define success by getting into sort of around the playoff mix and things like that. As mentioned, that Brian McDermott side was on fewer points at this stage. The season before that, when we got to Wembley as well, we had a shocking start. I remember we lost at home to Scunthorpe, didn't we? We had a really ropey side. And once they signed a few players, like Ian Hart, it slowly got going. And even last season, it took them a while to get into stride.
It did. And like I said, I just think you need to let them have the time, because we know they've got some good players. They've got a good squad of players and they've got some good individuals, but they need to know how to play in the team and need to settle in that side and settle with their life. So I said this before, you know, there's a lot of people, I mean, Luca's probably not had to move. He's lived in Fulham anyhow, so he's fine. But a lot of people move around the country and it does take a little time for their family to settle, for them to settle. Edwards is a prime example. He's been at one club for 10 years. Now his whole life must have been there, his kid's life, his wife's life. And that does take a little while to go and say, okay, we're going to move now, move your schools, settle as a family. And sometimes it takes players 3-4 months to get settled at a new club. And they're human, you know what I mean? We tend to think they're just going to come in and get on with it, but it doesn't happen that way.
It's not like a mechanical part that you just plug into a machine and it just starts working straight away.
And I think from experience of watching football over the years, you've seen players for the first... I mean, Shane Long, I nearly hounded him out of the club and now I'm asking for him to come back. You know what I mean?
And Adam Federici.
This is what I'm saying, yeah, and Adam Federici. So you do tend to see players progress as players when they've had a little bit more time to settle. And we've got a lot of young players as well that need that time.
There is nobody in this side that... I was asked in the pre-season a question by a magazine. It was like, who could we pay you to drive as far away from the football club as possible? I don't think there's anyone in that squad where I think you are rotten or you are just bad.
I've booked minibuses before. I've had that same question. And I don't think... There's not a player in this team that I don't like.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? It's not a player to say, don't play him, he's abysmal.
Yeah.
They're all good championship players, or maybe a little bit better than that, but
it's finding the right combination of them.
Yeah, there's no one that I don't like.
Yeah, I agree, which is a shame for the show, because, you know, we need a pantomime villain.
It's always helpful, yeah.
You know, it's award season in a couple of months' time, so, you know, who wins the vaunted Hal Robson Canoe Underachiever Award?
Must change it to the Most Average Award.
The Most Average Award, yeah. Although I will actually say that Joey Vandenberg continues, I think he has risen into Hal's shoes as the most frustrating player that we've got at this football club, because he will do something brilliant and then something awful in equal measure.
Then put Piazon through for a long goal.
Just, he's so frustrating. But that's, again, it's why players end up at Reading.
Exactly.
because they've got flaws.
If they'd have finished the article, then we haven't got them.
Indeed. Right, anyway, that rounds up the mailbag. Again, thank you to everyone who has chipped in via at the Tarlest End on Twitter. It's the Tarlest End at gmail.com, facebook.com/Tarlest End. You can also get, you can also watch the YouTube channel at youtube.com/Tarlest End. Been a bit quiet on the YouTube front. As mentioned, I've been away, so we've not had a chance to do many post-game shows. Hopefully we'll get those back off the ground in the next few weeks as well. And of course, thank you again to everyone who continues to fund us via patreon.com/the Tarlhurst End. Meantime, time to wrap up this show. Got two games to preview in Any Other Business.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. Any Other Business.
So before that game against Hull on Saturday, Westie, we've got the Carabao Cup to deal with. It is Swansea who are the visitors to the Mad Stad for what feels like about the 20th time in the last 5 years.
Yeah.
Not exactly the glamour Premier League opposition you wanted, but this does prove provides a bit of a winnable tie.
Yes, it's winnable. But again, Swansea have come and probably changed the side like we may do. I'm guessing that Stammer put out a relatively strong team because he has in the last two rounds. And I'm sure Swansea would be more interested in staying in the Premier League. So what team they put out, I don't know. But Swansea play some good football. We do know they keep the ball. They'll try and play us at our own game to a certain extent. And it'd be a tough game for Reading.
Well, they kept Spurs quiet at Wembley. You know, a bit of a step down for the away following from Wembley to the Mercedes Stadium. They drew 0-0 with Spurs at Wembley on Saturday. In the last round, they thrashed the MK Dons 4-1. And you look at the team that played in that last round, Westie. It's not... You know, yeah, I'm sure there's a few changes in there, but it's a pretty strong side. You know, there's not a lot of complete unknowns in that side. You know, you've got your Tom Carrolls, your Jordan Ayews, your Tammy Abraham. We know what he can do. Angel Rangel, I think he played in the playoff final. He's been there that long. Olsen, Bartley, Alfie Mawson, who was in our academy at one stage as well. So lots of strong players. It looks like this isn't one that Swansea are just sort of throwing the kids at.
No, again, yeah, they have put up some strong sides and they've got some good results. And we said it before and you hear it a lot, it's a lot of cliches, but winning games becomes a habit and you don't want to be going the Carabao Cup and coming to Reading and getting beat. So I'm sure they're going to turn up trying to win the game. And it'd be a good test for Reading because, like I say, Swansea will come and play them at their own game.
Yeah, one defeat in four for Swansea as well. So they're in some pretty good form. The bookies have got this. Reading are 27-10 to win in 90 minutes. The draw is 13-5 and Swansea are 11-10, just better than evens, favourites for this one. Where would you... It's not part of the prediction league, so where would your money be going? Hashtag gamble away.
I think Swansea beat us.
You think?
Yeah.
Score?
We won't score many, so let's go 2-1.
I actually think we're going to nick this 1-0.
I hope you're right. I just think that at the moment, I think Swansea will be too much for us.
You talked about Stam putting out a fairly strong side. Would you pick your strongest side for this game, or would you still give the likes of your Colas, your George Evans a bit of a run out?
Yeah, I think I'd mix it up. I think I'd put some of the subs on that have not played over the last couple of weeks. I don't think it's that important to us. You know, I don't think we're going to win the Carabao Cup. I think if we got to the semi-finals, it would be a near on miracle, because although teams do play weakened sides, if you look at some of the sides in there, some of the weak teams have put out, I've got 11 international footballers, you know, so I would just say, like, we put out some of the players like your Evanses and Beerens, maybe give them a run out, and, you know, some of the others that are not there or thereabouts, and say to them, look, you've got a chance to impress me for Saturday.
Yeah, I might be more tempted to go for a quote-unquote full-strength side if we didn't have a midweek game the following week as well, but I think asking them to play four games in 2 weeks is a bit silly.
I'd give players like McShane in that a rest, you know, because they'd have over the couple of years picked up injuries, and you think to yourself, at his age, is there any point risking him for a game like that? There isn't really, is there?
No, not at all. Anyway, as I said, I think we're going to nick this one 1-0 and hopefully a place in round four and then a trip to Wembley for Spurs away in round four, please. after that, it's back to league affairs. Hull at home, managed by Mr. Slutsky. Any excuse to say the name?
What a name.
Yeah, I know. Childish humour right at the end of the show here. Not in the best of form, Westie. They've only won two out of their nine games this season. They've got a familiar face returning in Michael Hector as well, but it's a bit of a weird looking side, that whole team. They drew at the weekend. Not an overpowering side.
No, they're not coping with relegation very well, are they? Same as Sunderland. They seem to be stuttering to start, a bit like Villa did, I suppose, back last year. But I don't know if you see Michael Hector this week. He was
called off at the break.
Yeah, he very much reminded me of Michael Hector that hasn't progressed at all since he left Reading by the fact that he got caught on a ball and they conceded the goal.
Michael Hector is now 25 years old and he has had one season in his professional career that has not been out on loan.
Shame, innit?
Yeah.
It's a waste. Same as Alex McCarthy, waste. Well, it's just such a shame that these big clubs buy players like that and then just let them rot, basically.
Yeah, that's part of the business side of things, isn't it? Because the funny thing is, Michael Hector will probably still get sold for 4 or 5 million.
Oh, yeah.
Someone will just buy him.
He's probably still a very good player. Like I say, he hasn't changed that much when I see him last, where he tends to make the odd stupid error.
I think he only ended up playing about 15 games or so for Frankfurt out in Germany on loan. So he's played 8 times this season for Hull. So, you know, he's been a regular, although, as mentioned, he got hauled off at half time. So, yeah, I mean, they've got some good players. You've got your Seb Larsens in there, your Dicko. Fraser Campbell is all right. David Myler's a good player as well, like him. And a bit of experience, the likes of McGregor and Dawson. So, tough team. But you've got to say, this is a game Reading should probably, you know, if they don't win this, you're going to be disappointed.
We're at home, so I expect them to win every game in the Championship at home. Like I say, they haven't done well. They haven't hit the ground running. And they don't look like a side that's going to be capable of going straight back up at the moment. So I think you're looking for Reading to try and win that match.
Yeah, the bookies have got Reading the 11-10 favourites. This one, draw is 5-2 and Hull are 23-10, so just over 2-1. So remains to be seen. Anyway, Westy, I thought I'd bury this right at the end of the show. Not important, but you might be top of the prediction league.
For the first time in 10 seasons, I think there's a 9 seasons, however long I've been doing it, I don't think I've ever been top.
Yep, you are. You correctly predicted a 1-1 draw.
It's two off Brentford. Right? Two right results.
Yeah, you've got two fully correct results. We've had a collective shocker. There's no other way to put this. You know, there have been technically 21 points available up for grabs. Your top was 6. Then Mark's got 4. He predicted 2-2 at Brentford, so he got a point for that. Then myself and Johnny, previous champions, are on 3. Because we've got one correct score right this season. And Paul Handbags Harris and Tom Crocker. Tom Crocker's having a shocker. He's on 1 point, as is Handbags. So, yeah. Look,
all to play for.
Yeah, all I'm saying is, look, we've never said that we're going to win your money with our predictions. at least we've not been put out as tipsters.
No, we've never said that we're going to win anyone any money.
In fact, we've always said hashtag gamble aware.
Yeah, and I've never won any money, really. Yeah. So, yeah.
There is a reason we're recording this in a smallish house rather than like a palatial mansion.
So far, anyway.
Yeah, you know, things can change quickly. But anyway, as you are the league leader, I'll let you go first for the whole game. What say you?
Right. We won't keep a clean sheet, so let's hope we score 2 goals. So Reading 2, Hull 1.
2-1. I am going to go for... I'm going to be slightly more optimistic, actually. I'm going to say 2-0. I think we will actually keep them out. But it remains to be seen. Anyway, I predicted doom at Brentford deliberately so we'd get a point. So, anyway.
Maybe it could be a tactic going forward.
Yeah, just the negative. I think Johnny's been doing that for 3 years in the Prediction League. So he's won one.
And he's there or thereabouts most years.
Indeed. I think he won the year we were awful. So there you go. Anyway, that does just about wrap up the show. I will be back with Tom Crocker. Hopefully on Friday, might be Thursday, not entirely sure at the moment, but keep an eye on the Twitter feed for that, for the podcast extra. If you've not listened to that show yet since we relaunched, it's basically a quick 20-odd minute show. We just round up the main sort of news headlines, look ahead to the weekend, get the news from Yap's press conference. So, if you struggle to get through a whole show, although in saying that, I mean, come on, you know, with a goal like this.
Why would you?
Exactly. But anyway, if you do like your show a little bit shorter, then I encourage you to check that one out on Friday as well. We'll also obviously have the Swansea game to talk about as well, so tune in for that one. Again, all the usual places, head up to thetylersend.com, lots of great content up on there. We've got lots of reviews, roundups, got the player ratings from Brentford. We've got our League 1 and League 2 roundup provided by our chums at D3, D4 Football. A couple of goals, former Reading players, QC Appiah, remember him?
No.
He was on loan in for Steve Clarke, scored up at Derby, Mr. Appiah.
Oh, I thought you said QC Appiah. Yeah. I thought, who's that?
No, QC Appiah, sorry.
Yeah, I do remember him, yeah.
He scored. Jake Taylor got a goal at the weekend as well, so that's nice to see.
Yep.
So, go ahead and check that one out. And I said, lots of great content up. I think I'm going to put a bit of an opinion piece up on the Flair Gate, needless to say. As you heard earlier in the show, I wasn't a fan of it. So, stay tuned for that as well. And obviously, reports and ratings from the next 2 games. Westy, thank you for joining me. Hopefully get you back on. Hopefully it won't be another... 8 games while we have you on.
It's always a pleasure.
And in the meantime, as always, go on you Ars.